Writers Reviewing Writers, Episode 2. Writers Reviewing Writers is a group of writers from across genres, novice to professional, who compare two books chosen to represent one author. What makes these works different? And how are they similar? Can we learn from the books to become better writers, or perhaps avoid the pitfalls of the author? Listen, learn, and be inspired to create. Welcome to Episode 2. Our featured author today is Maya Angelou. We will be discussing Maya's books, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, and Mom and Me and Mom. I utilize quotes from both books to fashion the discussion questions. Our main characters to analyze are Maya Angelou. Wouldn't they be surprised when one day I woke out of my black, ugly dream and my real hair, which was long and blonde, would take the place of the kinky mass that Mama wouldn't let me straighten? Vivian Baxter. I followed the voice and I knew she had made a mistake, but the pretty little woman with red lips and high heels came running up to my grandmother. Bailey Johnson. For a while, I was the only recipient of Bailey's kindness. It was not that he pitied me, but that he felt we were in the same boat for different reasons, and that I could understand his frustration, just as he could countenance my withdrawal. And finally, Mama. I didn't ask you to apologize in front of Marguerite because I don't want her to know my power, but I order you now and herewith leave stamps by sundown. What are your feelings about each character? What are your reactions or responses to the quotes chosen? Maya Angelou. I was surprised that Maya's name is really a nickname given to her by Bailey. Good writing is even better with observation, and Maya had the ability to record through her observations, her life, and created a piece of prose that eloquently demonstrated why she is a celebrated poet with her book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. Vivian Baxter seemed all pretty on the outside and vapid and self-absorbed, and I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. But Mom and Me and Mom, her mother's strength was truly highlighted. I grew to respect a woman that firmly stood within herself and lived her life by her decisions and direction. Bailey had the ability of being everyone's friend. He had that effortless quality to him. It was tragic in many ways how he had devolved into a drug-addled resignation. When Maya went to visit Bailey in the drug den in San Francisco, it was like he was resigned to dying, but there was still this fire there with the way he commanded the other addicts to not hurt his sister. While Vivian Baxter reveled in her personal power of self and place, Bailey seemed unable to recognize his own power unless it was helping or protecting Maya, his sister. And finally, Mama. Maya's grandmother commanded respect for her deeds and general personality. It was only after the second time that Maya came to live with her grandmother that I grasped the glory and power of this woman. I truly admired Mama and what she accomplished, not for a woman or a person of color, but because of who she was, a strong and powerful leader.
So when I look at these main characters, Maya and her mother Vivian, her brother Bailey, and her grandmother, who she calls Mama, I was struck by how very interesting all these people were. Maya was always mired in self-doubt, but later you find out she's like this headlining dancer and performer. So she was obviously just as glamorous as she portrayed her mother, Vivian. She was always, you know, she was always talking about the high heels and how beautiful she was and her red lipstick. And I think that probably shaped a lot of Maya, even maybe if she didn't believe it later in life when she finally kind of accepted how glamorous she was as well. But when she was a little girl, she was always doubting herself. And her brother Bailey was such an enigma. And she's very careful, I feel like, in both books to portray Bailey in the most wonderful brotherly light. And there's, to me, not enough there. I feel like I don't know Bailey enough. And Mama was always this fount of strength. Reading the first book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, you're like afraid of Mama and you don't understand why she's so mean. And then in the second book, you really see how kind she was and you realize it must have been really hard for her to give those kids back to Mom, to Vivian.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm going to start with Mama. I'm going to work backwards. I thought Mama was very gruff. Obviously, she's a very godly woman, really entrenched in her religion and church, and that's how she raised the kids. She was gruff and very regimented. Bailey and Maya always worked from a young age, and perhaps this is where they acquired their strong work ethic as they grew up. I found her to be very, I don't want to say warm, but definitely loving and try to do everything in the kids' best interest, even though I'm sure that it really hurt her heart to let them go. And Bailey, I don't really feel like I know Bailey as well as the other characters. And perhaps I need to read the Maya's other autobiographies. He just wasn't as evident to me as the other characters. I would say, though, that Bailey was Maya's, especially in the early years, her number one supporter, her best friend. He was always there for her. And I'm sure that he made a huge difference in her life. And Vivian, Maya's mother, she was really interesting as well, in that how she came across was sort of brash. When I think about her, I think she's a realist. I think she did whatever it took to make a good home for her kids, to make money. She just was a very realistic and down-to-earth person, very supportive of her children. And Maya, oh my goodness, you know, we could probably talk about Maya Angelou all day long. She was just fabulous, and I found her, these two books, I want to read more based on these two autobiographies.
Let's begin with the beginning. Why did Maya use the following as openings to her books? I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. What you looking at me for? I didn't come to stay. I hadn't so much forgot as I couldn't bring myself to remember. Other things were more important. What you looking at me for? I didn't come to stay. Whether I could remember the rest of the poem or not was immaterial. The truth of the statement was like a wadded up handkerchief, sopping wet in my fists, and the sooner they accepted it, the quicker I could let my hands open and the air would cool my palms. Mom and me and Mom. The first decade of the 20th century was not a great time to be born Black and poor and female in St. Louis, Missouri. But Vivian Baxter was born Black and poor to Black and poor parents. Later, she would grow up and be called beautiful. As a grown woman, she would be known as the butter-colored lady with the blowback hair. Maya exhibited in both books this insecurity over her looks. It's like no matter how much a woman can accomplish, we are bound by our looks and how pretty we can be. It is interesting to see that insecurity because Maya did so much more than multiple people could do in one lifetime. Her ability to overcome such societal difficulties and oppression and yet rise again and again, reaching higher heights than those that tried to keep her down. Yet, she opens about her dress episode and wanting to look different in the caged bird, and then speaks on more than one occasion about her mother's beauty, not only in the caged bird, but even states within the first paragraph of Mom and Me and Mom of how beautiful Vivian Baxter was. I find it relatable in the sense that perhaps it is a biological need to be desired and wanted. I want to think we as women can rise above such vanity, but understand too how that is such a basic feminine quality that is within all of us.
In the beginning of I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, Maya, the story opens with her trying to recite the poem in church and goes on from there where she has an accident. She stumbles out of church with this. I'll read a little bit here. She says, "Then before I reached the door, the sting was burning down my legs and into my Sunday socks. I tried to hold to squeeze it back to keep it from speeding. But when I reached the church porch, I knew I'd have to let it go, or it would probably run right back up to my head, and my poor head would burst like a dropped watermelon, and all the brains and spit and tongue and eyes would roll all over the place. So I ran down into the yard and let it go. I ran peeing and crying, not toward the toilet out back, but to our house. I'd get a whipping for it, to be sure, and the nasty children would have something new to tease me about. I laughed anyway, partially for the sweet release. Still, the greater joy came not only from being liberated from the silly church, but from the knowledge that I wouldn't die from a busted head. If growing up is painful for the Southern Black girl, being aware of her displacement is the rust on the razor that threatens the throat. It is an unnecessary insult." Wow, she just packed so much into just a few paragraphs there. It's very poetic and very poetic, but not flowery. And she truly gets the message across of what she's going through on so many different levels. And I think, Kristen, you make some really interesting points about her own lack of self-confidence, as well as her not focus, I guess, on beauty, as well as her... on her mother's beauty and how important that seemed to be for her.
For me, the first opening, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, it feels a little bit like, even though I think she was probably, I believe she was like 41 when she wrote that one, but it still feels a little bit like she's trying to clarify something she hasn't quite articulated. And so starting the opening of that book like that with the poem, and then the way she describes her, you know, her accident and running home, it's still very poetic. And you can see that part of Maya that is a poet. But it's like having a song stuck in your head. You're trying to work through all these really complex emotions. And in the second book that we read, her last book, Mommy and Mom, she sounds like an older woman. She sounds like a woman in her 80s. She's so much more direct. She's sure of herself. She's to the point. And the point is her mom. And she starts with her mom and she just to the point, kind of cuts right to it, you know, and immediately starts working on how are we going to talk about how great my mom actually really was. And I thought that was interesting.
Vivian Baxter was charming, elusive, strong, and irresistible. Would you agree with these descriptions? And do you think she was a good mother? I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. We were served formally, and she apologized for having no orchestra to play for us, but she said she'd sing as a substitute. She sang and did the time step and the snake hips and the Susie Q. What child can resist a mother who laughs freely and often, especially if the child's wit is mature enough to catch the sense of the joke? Mom and me and Mom, I will look after you, and I will look after anybody you say needs to be looked after. Any way you say, I am here. I brought my whole self to you. I am your mother.
I think this really is a juxtaposition between what a child wants in their mom and what an adult wants in their mom. And a child wants a mom that is fun and a mom that lets them in on the joke, right? So like the dancing and the joking, that's exactly what a kid would worship in their mom. And what an adult wants in their mother is that trust. I will take care of whoever you say, however you say. I mean, that is implicit, very deep abiding trust. And every adult wants that from their mom. And I think, I'm not a mother, but I've known a lot of mothers and I have a mother, like we all do somewhere out there. And I don't think that it's necessarily that Vivian was a bad mom at all. I think she was in an impossible situation. This was in the 30s and 40s. And she was, she was a single Black mom in the 30s and 40s, and she worked. And what else could she have done? I think the fact that she sent them to Mama, her husband's mother, instead of her own well-established but very rough family in St. Louis, to me, I think she thought really long and hard about what she wanted her kids to value and what she wanted her kids to care about. Because her family, they were well-known around town and they were doing fine and all this, and they were kind of glamorous. But she sent her children to Mama, who was going to be really strict and really pious and teach them to value very different things than her family. I don't know. I think that she was a woman that was a realist. Like Kelly said before, she understood her limitations. And I think this choice made her a great mother, actually.
Well, what was interesting is how you said send to her Mama, because what I find the juxtaposition between Vivian and Mama, the paternal grandmother, who her Mama's son was actually named Bailey too. And Bailey, the brother, was referred to as Junior a lot. But Mama was a working woman. She owned her own store. She was single. She had a special needs son. And yet she was still there taking care and even taking care of her grandchildren. Where Vivian, it's revealed in Mom and Me and Mom that Vivian was like, I didn't want anything to do with young children. They made me angry. And what I found interesting about that is I think for a lot of moms, that is a hidden dark secret that's never spoken or afraid to be spoken. And because my initial thought was, how could you send your children across country by themselves? I mean, even the grandmother sold practically everything to get the money cobbled together to take her grandchildren back. And yet the mom and the father, who should be equally at fault in that way, did not. And yet the mom beyond stepped up to the plate and Mom and Me and Mom. And I really feel like without that last book Maya had and the perspective of age, we wouldn't have ever gotten this complete picture of what was really Vivian was a remarkable woman and ahead of her time with, doing her own thing and living her life the way she wanted. So in the end, Mom and Me really was a love letter by Maya to Vivian Baxter that allowed us readers to get that complete picture.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have a question for you. What are your thoughts on when Bailey or Junior and Maya were sent to St. Louis for the short period of time when they were younger and they lived with Vivian? And I think her husband at the time, because she was married, I think about four times. What are your thoughts on what occurred there and then the kids being sent back to Mama?
Well, I think, again, it illustrated that the mom just couldn't cope with young kids because the kids were still really young. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I can't remember if she was married to the guy or if he just lived, but he ultimately was the one that raped Maya. And while the mother is not at fault at all for that, I feel like she really was given these kids. And again, she couldn't handle it. And, I mean, that's my.
Yeah. And I think it's a good thing that Mama was always back there in the wings. Not everybody is a good parent, you know, from birth. Not everybody's made for that. And I think it's really important that, you know, Vivian was a woman in an impossible situation. She wasn't just a mom, and not everybody has that maternal instinct. Yeah. Thank you. And I think the hardest thing about reading these two books together is when you read I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, you see Mama, aka Maya's grandmother, you see her as the mom. And at the end of Mommy and Mom, Maya is challenging the same readers, us, anybody, especially because we haven't read everything in between, to accept the fact that she had to. This really hard fact when she got off that train with her grandmother in San Francisco and had to accept Vivian as her mom. This is a very difficult fact for us to accept, that Vivian is her mother. And that is, it's wonderful that we all feel so conflicted, because it's complicated. It's a really complicated situation.
The nonfiction process is based on fact. How does a writer navigate the facts without twisting the details in retelling? I know why the caged bird sings. I figure he gonna be that kind of nasty, he gonna have to pay for it. Mama and her son laughed and laughed over the white man's evilness and her retribution sin. I preferred, much preferred, my version. Mom and me and Mom. It is a story indelibly seared into my mind, and I've told part of it before. I must depend on hearsay for the events of the next few hours. So the first quote in Caged Bird is referencing the two different stories I used in Mama's when I was talking about the character, really what ended up being Maya's explanation of the events that transpired between the dentist and Mama, the grandmother, collecting money. And then later Maya confessing or revealing to the readers what actually transpired between the dentist and the grandmother. And then the second quote was from Mom and Me and Mom, is in reference to the horrible beating that Maya endured by this basically jealous, psychotic boyfriend. And I think in both, it shows that Maya, with her writing, is the stories we tell ourselves are mostly fact, but a little bit of fiction. The dialogue in really both books could not be a journalistic record, yet Maya had the essence of the situation within the dialogue. And what Maya's books show is that an autobiography can relay the events and people, but not have to be so staid and uninteresting in the retelling of the same events and people. And yet the reader can still gather what essentially is the truth.
I think that you're 100% right. She's 41 when I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings was written. And her mom was still very much alive. That was in 1969. She was 84, 85 when Mom, Me, and Mom was published. And she had, at that time, about 20 years without the physical presence of her mother, Vivian. And so I think it makes a lot of sense that she is naturally remembering things differently, and things are going to be colored a little bit differently because she doesn't have her mom anymore to ask, hey, what do you remember about that? I think it makes perfect sense. And I agree with you. There's always going to be that little element of fiction, because when you're remembering things, especially things that long ago, you've got to fill in the own gaps of your fallible mind.
Go. I found this really interesting article online called Themes in Maya Angelou's Autobiographies. Her use of fiction writing techniques such as dialogue, characterization, and development of theme, setting, plot, and language has often resulted in the placement of her books into the genre of autobiographical fiction. She made a deliberate attempt in her books to challenge the common structure of the autobiography by critiquing and changing and expanding the genre. And it's really interesting. She recognized that there were fictional aspects to her books, and she tended to diverge from the conventional notion of autobiography as truth. I would venture to say that anyone who writes a memoir or her own autobiography would travel down the road of a little bit of fiction, at least, because not everybody remembers everything about their lives. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that I think that's a really great point. And she did really revolutionize the way an autobiography is sort of conducted or told or even written. And I think this book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, is really the first in what has now become sort of a common practice of the creative nonfiction, sort of the idea of memory, hearsay, what other people have known, thoughts, describing a situation. It all sort of, Maya put it in this melting pot that really not only it makes you become immersed into the world. And so the real people become characters and alive in a way that I think historical or typical history type biography books kind of put too much of a distance between the reader and the actual written word.
Yeah. And I think I can relate definitely where I have a big family where everybody is basically a storyteller. And after a while, you realize you're looking back on your childhood or whatever. And what I remember as things that happened to me, it's actually a little bit of what my brother said and a little bit of what my mom remembered and a little bit of what I remembered and a little bit of what I kind of hope, I think, what everyone was thinking. And everybody kind of, our histories are a little bit fictionalized. And I think it's human nature.
How was Maya able to overcome resentment of her experiences when many of us may not have been able to in the same circumstances? I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. I was at home again, and my mother was a fine lady. Dolores was a fool, and more important, a liar. Mom and me and Mom. I was aware after the birth of my son and the decision to move and get a place for just the two of us. I thought of Vivian Baxter as my mother. On the odd occasion and out of habit, sometimes I called her lady, but her treatment of me and her love for my baby earned her the right to be called mother. Maya's lifesaver, I believe what really saved her was her voracious love of books and knowledge. She hungered for learning. It was a lifeline of words and how books presented another way than her current life's circumstances. Reading created the possibility of a different way, and I don't know how I would have survived some of Maya's situations. Rape at a young age, and then later the brutal beating from one boyfriend, highlighted Mom and Me and Mom, it made me respect Maya's strength. Hers was a quiet strength, but without it, I don't think Maya would have kept going.
I think that one of the reasons Maya is so fascinating to people is her ability to let go of resentment. I don't know that she would have captivated us for generations and for decades and decades of, autobiographical writing if she were any other way. I mean, she kind of is a teacher, I think, to me as a reader, of how it's not about resentment. She asks us, as has been asked to of her in her difficult life, just by necessity, to open your head up and open your heart up and be aware that life is complicated and relationships are really complicated, and you can be resentful and you can be angry, or you can open your heart up to that. It's like, where on the one hand we think of her grandmother as mama, but you know, and then later we have to accept that Vivian is also her mother. She had to live with some very difficult and really beautiful truths. And I think that you know, that resentment thing, letting go of resentment and just accepting and making your heart a little bigger and making rooms for these complex things. I think to me, that's part of what makes Maya just an amazing person that I want to know more about.
Absolutely. I agree with you, Keisha. I think that her resentment and letting go of resentment, if she had any, had a lot to do with the support and that the love that she received pretty much from day one. She had Mama, who was a very supportive and strong woman in her life, and was actually a very good example of a good example of a strong woman who did very well, even in the worst of circumstances. So she had her love and support. She had her own mother, Vivian, and she had her brother. And I think she soaked it up. She soaked up that love and support. And it stayed with her throughout all the different issues and problems that she encountered throughout her life.
Bailey was everything to Maya in her first book. Yet in Maya's last book, Bailey is hardly mentioned. Did Bailey's later struggles with drugs affect his place as Maya's sole confidant? I know why the cage bird sings. At some point, he noticed me still in the doorway, and his consciousness stretched to remember our relationship. Maya, if you want to leave now, come on. I'll take care of you. Mom and me and Mom. Bailey stared straight at her. We are leaving your house. Nobody, but nobody beats up my baby sister. Bailey took my hand. Bailey was such a prominent figure in Cage Bird, but he seemed to remove himself from Maya's life. First, he moved out of the house once they moved to San Francisco to live with the mother. Then he became a merchant marine, and finally he went down the dark path of drugs. It seemed so odd that he was missing so much in the second book until it was revealed that he in fact suffered from a very complex and deep and very entrenching drug addiction that, you know, caused him not only to go live in a drug den, but he seemed to have it was implied he had a relapse after his wife died because he later moved to Hawaii. And Bailey was everything to Maya. He could do no wrong, and in many ways was the only male paternal figure she had in her life. For him to fail her by becoming an addict, I think that Maya preferred not to remember him. It's my opinion. It was almost too painful for her to write about Bailey and Mom and me and Mom, and that it was best to keep him as he was, kind of frozen in that infectious way that he was portrayed in I Know Why the Cage Bird Sings.
That's a really good point, Kristen, and I agree with that. I think that he was such an important person in her life, you know, when they were growing up, that there's this sense of disappointment on Maya's part that they didn't continue to have that close relationship. It could also be not only the addiction that that made the distance, but it also could just be distance, in that he was in Hawaii, she was in San Francisco, she was here, she was there. I mean, Maya was. She was all over the place. She was all over the world. So perhaps just not communicating put that distance in place. Not really sure. I'm really interested in seeing how he's portrayed in her other books. It would be really, I'm intrigued. So I'd like to know more about Bailey.
I think maybe I would kind of defer personally trying to figure that out. I think maybe she just really chose to highlight her mom in this book. And she'd already extolled at great length, especially in I Know Why the Cage Bird Sings, about Bailey and his wonderful attributes and as a protector of his sister. And I also wonder if when she wrote this if she was trying to protect his privacy and his legacy, because he had passed away by the time she wrote this book in 2000. So I don't know if he had children or something. Maybe she wanted to kind of, you know, keep his dignity and his privacy and his legacy. I'm not sure.
How does Mom and Me and Mom compare to the poetic style of I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings? I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. The lamplight in the store gave a soft make-believe feeling to our world, which made me want to whisper and walk about on tiptoe. The odors of onions and oranges and kerosene had been mixing all night and wouldn't be disturbed until the wooden slat was removed from the door and the early morning air forced its way in with the bodies of people who had walked miles to reach the pickup place. Mom and Me and Mom. I looked at my mother's lifeless form and thought about her passion and wit. I knew she deserved a daughter who loved her and had a good memory, and she got one. There, in my opinion, is no comparison to the books in poetic styling. I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings is simply a superior book in style and Maya's gripping storytelling. The writing's eloquent phrasing and unique poetic descriptions of people or events was so much more evident in I Know Why Caged Bird Sings. The craft of writing clearly supported Maya Angelou's notoriety as a celebrated wordsmith, author, and poet. Everything about the first book is more sophisticated. We are told as authors that we grow as writers as we age with the craft and become richer with our writing. What Mom and Me and Mom showed to me that even amazing writers can become tired with the writing process. Mom and Me and Mom is a very interesting read, but only to those who have read Maya's work before, especially I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. If Mom was the first exposure of Maya Angelou, you might be surprised and wondered how or why Maya is a significant and important author. Mom isn't boring, but the innovation of description and phraseology isn't as present. Caged Bird truly sings while Mom and Me and Mom hums. I would like to read this one article that I found before I pass this to Keisha that highlights Maya's writing schedule. I found it from Business Insider webpage. It was written by Julie Zeveloff on May 28, 2014. It was published. Maya titled, Maya Angelou always rented a hotel room just for writing. Many writers have their own rituals, but by all accounts, Dr. Angelou's style was unique. She was widely known for her love of sherry, telling George Plimpton in a 1990 interview that a glass of the fortified wine was an integral part of her writing process. I might have it all at 6:15 a.m., just as soon as I get in. But usually it's about 11 o'clock when I'll have a glass of sherry. Dr. Angelou said she told the Daily Beast in a 2013 interview that she had given up her daily sherry habit 2 years earlier. She also regularly wrote in a hotel room, even when she lived in a house. As of 2013, she still kept a hotel room in her hometown, which she paid for by the month. And she insisted on keeping the sheets unchanged and taking all the art off the walls. Dr. Angelou described her writing process. I have kept a hotel room in every town I've ever lived in. I rent a hotel room for a few months, leave my home at 6, and try to be at work by 6:30. To write, I lie across the bed so that this elbow is absolutely encrusted at the end, just so rough with calluses. I never allow the hotel people to change the bed because I never sleep there. I stay until 12:30 or 1:30 in the afternoon, and then I go home and try to breathe. I look at the work around 5. I have an orderly dinner, proper, quiet, and lovely dinner, and then I go back to work the next morning. Sometimes in hotels, I'll go into the rooms and there'll be a note on the floor which says, Dear Miss Angelou, let us change the sheets. We think they are moldy, but I only allow them to come in empty wastebaskets. I insist that all things are taken off the walls. I don't want anything in there. I go into the room and I feel as if all my beliefs are suspended. Nothing holds me to anything. No milkmaids, no flowers, nothing. I just want to feel. And then when I start to work, I'll remember. I'll read something, maybe the Psalms, maybe again something from Dr. Dunbar, James Weldon Johnson, and I'll remember how beautiful, how pliable the language is, how it would lend itself if you pull it. It says, okay, I remember that, and I start to write. Finally, you could always tell Dr. Angela had been writing because she played with her hair. As a result, she started to tie it back while she was writing. Dr. Angela explained her hair ties to the Daily Beast. Well, I was married a few times, and one of my husbands was jealous of my writing. When I write, I tend to twist my hair. Something from my small mind to do, I guess. When my husband would come into the room, he'd accuse me and say, "You've been writing!" As if it was a bad thing. He could tell because of my hair. So I learned to hide my hair with a turban of some sort.
That was really amazing. I'm really glad that you found that article. That was absolutely fascinating. I'm definitely going to look that up myself. She's such an interesting person. That's so crazy. I love it. As far as the styling goes, I was really inclined to agree with you at first. But about halfway through Mom and Me and Mom, I just really started to appreciate that fresh, direct take. And I'll refer back to what I said earlier about how I think, you know, she's writing like an 85-year-old woman. She's like, hey, this is what happened. And I don't think she, for whatever reason, felt the need to be as flowery and poetic as before. Although I did love that about her writing before, and it really showcases her chops as a poet because she was that as well. The comparisons, I mean, to me, it's like a slice of her life where she, you know, from 40 to 80 something, that is, to some people, that is a lifetime, really. And I think that when we're looking at these two books, they're like bookends to a whole life. And her perspective and the way that she writes, of course, is going to be super different. So I really appreciated both and both styles.
Kristen, that was such a great article. I'm so happy that you shared that with us. And I think it, for us as writers, it's especially pertinent to hear about Maya's, her process. And, you know, obviously it worked. You know, she had her way of doing things and it worked for her. I think that's great and really a really interesting tidbit to know. So I love both of these books and I love reading them together. I don't know. I agree with you, Kristen. I'm not sure that I would have read or really understood Mom and Me and Mom by itself, but, and maybe this is getting into the next question, but as companion books, they were excellent companion books because I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings is about Maya's, the beginning of her life. And it is very detailed. It's very poetic. It's really fun to read. But you read it, or I read it, not knowing a lot about her mother, Vivian, and wanting to know more. And so Mom and Me and Mom kind of brings that all together. And it's a full circle. It's a full circle process. So I love both of them. They're very, very different books, obviously written at different points in her life. And so how they're written and how we read them, because they're written so far apart, you know, it makes a lot of sense that they are different.
Now we're going to do the writer's rating. Would you recommend these books as companion reads? I would most definitely recommend both books as companion reads, and in the order of I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings first, followed by Mom and Me and Mom. Mom fills in the gaps of Caged Birds where questions or wondering about certain situations, particularly the Mexico incident with Maya's father, along with questions of why Vivian sent her young children across country to their paternal grandmother. In addition, Mom allowed me to get glimpses of Maya's life after Caged Bird. I would say the significant part of Mom and Me and Mom was that Maya was finally able to give a complete picture of her mother, Vivian Baxter.
I would absolutely recommend these books as companion reads. Two thumbs up for sure. And I agree with what you said. I think that the order really counts on this one.
And I agree with both of you. And I would definitely give them each 5 stars.
Our next podcast will feature Julia Alvarez, How the Garcia Girls Lost Their Accents, and Return to Sender. Join the Facebook group, The Writing Book Club, Authors and Writing Advice, to learn about other upcoming events. And for information about this podcast and more, check out kristenkendall.com. Remember, keep reading to stay inspired.